plagued a potential nugget.
Vishy, I want to move to a different topic, trying to get into the decode the mind of a champion, if you will. One of the pieces I'm curious about is the role of the left brain and the right brain in being an effective chess player. And how do you draw in on the two? And I say this, you alluded to the notion of instinct and intuition. But talk to us a little bit about how much of the meticulous planning gets coupled with sort of the pattern and the big picture thinking, which might be beyond the left brain capability.
Well, let me follow this rough terminology. My left brain is trying to have some sort of piece of control on the chessboard.
Right.
And my right brain is, let's say, what deal with when you lose control. So, I mean, I will describe it in those terms. So, I don't consciously break it down in that way, but mostly chess players would prefer to win an easy game than a hard game, would prefer to win without effort than effort, or rather, to put it differently, would prefer that the effort was at home in the training camp rather than at the board with the uncertainty involved. So everything which will fall under control, you will think of with the left. By that, I mean things which are already well known to everyone. I mean, there's this huge mass of knowledge that already exists about chess.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be able to work on that and then recall what you need at the moment that you need it. I mean, there are so many examples of people losing a game because they know the evaluation correctly. They may even know the idea, but they don't know it exactly.
Hmm.
And if you don't know it exactly, it's very difficult. You might slip up in the execution. So that, but that generally broadly speaks of control. So when you play against someone, you would like the game to develop along the lines of what you prepared this morning.
Hmm.
And so that is the systematic work. That's the work you work on during a training camp. You try to get the work out of the way. You check as much things meticulously and so on. But you should always be ready because you're basically playing against someone
mm-hmm.
who's trying to get you out there in the open.
Mm.
He's trying to get you out of your comfort zone and he's trying to make life difficult for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has the same knowledge that you have. So it's very easy for your opponent to think, this is what Anand would have prepared. How do I get him out? And so he's looking for unusual ways to surprise you.
Sort of game theory, right? In a way.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if he does that, you should be ready for surprises.
Right.
Now that means that when you learn a subject, even any part of chess that you plan to use for the next round or the next week or whatever, it's not enough to just remember or get a grip on the existing knowledge because everyone has that. And that doesn't differentiate you. Chances are you'll be dropped very soon into something which you hadn't looked at before. How do you deal with those problems? So the thing is, when you work, you can't only work on problems that lend themselves to solutions.
Got it.
You have to think more broadly and think, how do I train my skills in such a way that I can develop a feeling for this class of positions so that whatever turns up, I'll be able to find the best moves. So you have to do a bit of both. For the second skill, for the right brain, what do you do? You play a lot of 5-minute games, blitz games. You do problem solving. Problem solving is they are trying to find very unusual patterns. And the more unusual patterns you find, you're training your brain to think in unusual ways. So again, when you look at a position, how many candidate moves do you think of? If you normally think of 3, but after some problem-solving training, you're able to think of 5, that's very healthy because you'll pick up more unusual moves.
Understood.
So you have to balance your work in such a way that not only are you getting the proper work done, which is essential, by the way. The existing base of knowledge you have to learn to play and you have to learn to play it well.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to train the skills that you'll need to just cope with unexpected circumstances. And last but not least, the psychological aspect. There is no use having all the creative skills in the world if when the moment comes that you have to go into the unknown, you enter it with trepidation.
Mm.
Because then you've lost half the battle before it's thing. It's not utterly hopeless because you, still, if the position turns in your favor, you'll recover and whatever. But you must be psychologically ready for battle. That means the moment you have a chance to break free from the known areas and you go out there and you fight, you have to be ready and enthusiastic, if you like, about facing this unknown challenge.
And how do you build that capability, the psychological capability?
I think you try to play as often as possible. You, if your opponent is an uncomfortable opponent for you, then against that opponent, you'll tend to gravitate towards safety. And if you want to break that pattern, you'll have to figure out a way to do it. You might want to rethink the whole method of how you approach risks. But it's a mixture of things. Sometimes people will go to the board completely ready to take a risk. At the last minute, they will suddenly start seeing everything that's wrong with what they plan to do. And then they'll do the safe thing and come back. And then they realize that all the things that they thought were wrong, were themselves wrong. So in fact, they could have gone ahead with what they planned. And what is going on here? The thing is, psychologically, you don't want to enter an area that's risky. So at the moment you want to, your brain almost tricks you. It gives you arguments for going back to the safe and predictable course, which at that moment seem logical to you. So you justify it on the terms that you're saying, I'm going to be playing logically. I'm doing the logical thing here. And then you come back home and you realize you were covered. So you have to, you can learn by example. You can play a lot of blitz games. You can play training games. There are many ways to do this. You can study players who have the desired qualities that in that area. But it's often a psychological problem. It's not just, nothing in chess is easy to break down. So again, one of the things I feel that chess has taught me is that very far from controlling your brain is a wild horse there. And you need to work with it. You need to work with it. Sometimes it'll betray you and it's operating according to its own clock, its own schedule. You can't impose control on that. And so creativity partly is learning how to understand that you will lose control. So I've often alluded to this thing of losing control. Losing control can happen at many levels. Psychological, you can feel uncomfortable with playing something and so on. And so in chess, it's not enough to focus on the skills you can learn. There are also the skills you must become intelligent. I'll give you one quick example. I would often get to move 40. And move 40 is significant because it's the end of the first time control, which means that you get a fresh amount of time on your clock. And you, normally your time pressure is over. But a lot of people, the moment, the time between move 32 and 40 is so tense and they're so caught up in it, they're not able to stop. They'll make the 41st move anyway. And especially once upon a time, I was very prone to this error. And I was also prone to an error that when I had half an hour and my opponent had 3 seconds, I would try to play faster that he wouldn't have any time to think. It doesn't take a lot of intelligence to stop yourself and see that if you play fast, to not give him any time to think, you're not giving yourself any time to think either. So these were two areas where I had problems. And one of the things I did was I would simply make a mental note. I would think of some painful loss I had suffered as a result of these habits. So that when I went to the board, when I was on move 35, my opponent down to 3 seconds, he's shaking and the temptation is overwhelming. And I have half an hour, so I'm in no pressure. I would just tell myself to get up, go to the refreshment area, have a little bit of water or some coffee, and then I'd come back. And I found that this broke the tension. I stopped, I had become too emotionally bound in the game, and this broke that. And then I was able to bring some sanity to the process. And especially doing this after move 40, when neither of us is in any tension anymore. But just getting up, going away, and leaving it for 10 minutes, and then you come back, and you find that it resets your brain almost. So that's one technique. But there are techniques like this that you learn, you know, they're part of your bag of tools and your toolkit, and that's how it works.
Very interesting. And you spoke about, you know, organizing information. I'm curious about how you organize information in your head. And at least the way I think about it, there are two things, right? One is you need to have a database in your head of the various games that have been played and the research you've done, maybe specific to an opponent as well. And you need to have processing capacity to deal with new situations that come up.
Right.
So how do you organize your processor? In the sense, is there something that you've learned over the years in terms of not overloading with data that you don't have space for processing power? Is there a trade-off there, or is that a false trade-off?
I've never thought of my brain in terms of hard disk capacity. So, you know, there's a limited amount of space that I'm trying to work with. But it's like this. I have come to the conclusion that you can't manage your brain in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
But what you can do is to create the conditions that are ideal, where you've found in the past it tends to flourish. Mm-hmm. And you create those conditions. And so you follow the kind of habits that work well. Like, for instance, this habit of breaking on move 40 worked well for me.
Very interesting.
It meant I dropped the emotional baggage of the first 40 moves.
Hmm.
Now, a lot of people may not understand what is emotional baggage in chess. So, in a chess game, you can go through a lot of twists and turns. I might have been winning, then suddenly I blundered, and then I was lost, and now my opponent blundered, and now I'm back in the game and thing. So, here there's a lot of accumulated things. You're first kicking yourself for not winning your one position. You're thinking, I shouldn't even be having to play this now. But then you realize that you were lost as well. And then you realize that... But now, the thing is, the only position you'll ever have in the board is the one in front of you now.
Right.
That's the only thing you can do anything about. So you have to have this habit of breaking it. Now, overnight sleep is nice, but in this case, you have to find some way to break it. And I believe that it's important to keep the brain excited about chess, passionate about chess. So if you keep on looking at new positions, you look on things that interest you, or you look at difficult things that didn't come to you, if chess keeps fascinating you,
mm-hmm.
then chances are, then when the time comes to process, it'll process. When the time comes to remember, it'll remember.
Got it.
If people in the audience just want to know what is that in a very, very basic sense, try to see your recall in subjects that interest you, and try to see the recall in subjects that don't interest you.
Hmm.
And you'll understand what I'm talking about.
I hear you. The other piece I'm curious about, Vishy, is judgment, right? You spoke about that in the context of machines in the earlier section, which is what makes sense, all things considered. What can the business world learn from the world of chess in making sound objective judgment? Objectivity was another piece you spoke about. How do you think about judgment when you have multiple options to choose from? How do you pick the one that sort of makes sense for you at that point in time?
The first thing you learn in chess is you make the best move, because that is the best.
Mm-hmm.
Then as you get up the ranks, you learn that the best move might not always be what you require. What you require is the most uncomfortable move for your opponent.
Hmm.
Or you may find that a slightly better position in which you're very happy and comfortable and you feel everything inside out is better for you than a much better position that you don't feel completely comfortable in.
Mm-hmm.
So you learn to attune it a bit to your needs.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly, I think your judgment is just a collection of all your experience so far.
Right.
In some way that, in a process that you don't control.
Mm-hmm.
So you have all this experience, you have things, but it's very hard to tell what you will recall and what you want and what thing. There are times when I'm astonished at my recall. And there are times I forget something I saw that morning. I try to make... Whatever I need to remember, I try to make as interesting as possible so that I will remember it. Or I look at it several times in such a way. Or one funny thing, when I was training, I would often ask my trainers to quiz me in things I tend to forget. And so they would know roughly what I tend to forget, and they would do that. And then when I couldn't recall what I'm supposed to do, sitting in front of a room with all of them looking at me as I'm struggling to recall was so embarrassing that when I went to the board, I remembered it. It's like that. You you create the conditions for your brain to work well. And that, in a sense, is judgment.
Got it. And I guess, in a way, this ties up to the previous question as well. Are there rituals you practice to ensure that your sense of judgment and your processing power is kept at its fullest potential? What are the rituals you follow? You spoke about exercise, but otherwise, are there any mind or brain rituals that's worth discussing?
Some things. I mean, I found that a good night's sleep is very helpful. Especially a sleep which is not disturbed. Because we're not talking of rest as much as the ability to put the more nervous energy and the emotions from the previous day away so that when you wake up, you're looking at a fresh day. That works well. So then I work backwards from that. And often after a very tense game, I try to go for a long walk or I might even go to the gym. I'm not going for the exercise. I'm going there to tire myself so that I'll have a shower and then I'll just fall asleep. And I will not waste any energy thinking about the game. There are even players who prefer to do all their work at night. So they'll work till 5 or 6 in the morning even.
Wow.
And then go to sleep and wake up at 2 o'clock and go straight to the game without any further work. And what they are fighting is, if you wake up at 9 o'clock and your game is at 2 o'clock, then you're thinking, but if I can do this, but if I do this, he might do that. And if I do that, he might do this. And therefore, what should I do? And this could go wrong, that could go wrong. And you're using a lot of nervous energy thinking about this stuff. So what they're trying to accomplish by waking up at 2 o'clock is they have no time to worry about the game. They've done all their work the last night and then they've gone to sleep.
Understood.
In my case, that doesn't work because I can't stay awake till 6 in the morning and... But I will try to get a good night's sleep, then wake up. I like to work for some time. I found that superstition normally comes with that. If you had breakfast at 9 in the morning and you won that game, you'll want to go at 9 the next day and this kind of stuff, even though there should be no real connection. But you have to decide which is harmless and which is superstition that's driving you insane.
And the related piece I want to talk about, Vishy, was the conscious versus subconscious. And the reason I ask is I remember listening into one of your earlier conversations where you talk about taking a break from the game. Maybe I think it was in the context of schooling where you would go back to your books and come back and look at the chessboard and it looked clearer. Again, I sort of relate that to what you said about some of the players practicing till 6 a.m. and then going to sleep. How do you think about sort of the conscious approach to preparation versus the subliminal processing that's going on? What's the take on that?
Well, the subliminal is, I think if you keep being fascinated by chess, you will see all the interesting and unusual things that happen. You will recall it. Now, there is no way to say that at the right moment, you'll come up with the right idea. But by looking at a lot of material, you're increasing the chance that it'll probably be the right decision. I mean, if there's a critical mass of ideas, you'll probably find the right decision. So you do that. I try not to control that very much. I believe that it's important to learn almost like a child. If you're fascinated by a subject, it'll go in effortlessly. The subjects that bore you, you know. But then you have to do the reverse. In chess, you may not be able to avoid the subjects that bore you. So the thing is, how do you find a way of making that interesting? It can be against this guy I hate, I always lose this kind of position. So I'm going to work on this position, though I don't like it, because one day he will not beat me and I'll get satisfaction on that. You know, you can always work it backwards like that and do that. But I think you grow in chess and you learn in chess by being willing to learn new stuff. And I can't refine it more than that.
Very interesting. And just to pick, you've been at the top of the game for a pretty long time. And I love the point you make about making something interesting, even if it's not interesting on the face of it. How have you made chess interesting for yourself? Again, you also spoke about several people moving on to become bankers and lawyers and other things. So what's the secret of staying interested in a topic for this long? Or is it something that comes naturally to you?
Well, one thing is to take breaks from it. I mentioned many times that you hit a point where you're sick of the game. You've just been playing too much or studying too much. And then, you know, you go 1 month without even switching on the computer or touching a chessboard. And then you come back at the end of the month and suddenly you find a lot of the stuff that used to bore you has become interesting. So that's one thing. The second thing is to work on new stuff. I mean, working on old things, sometimes even if you have everything worked out, your brain forgets what you keep on working beyond a certain point. And so it's good to drop some things for a while, do other things, and then come back, and then you're okay. But if you're only doing one thing all the time, then it gets so routine that your brain stops being creative about it. It almost, it expects you to get by on muscle memory, and you know, it's not a good thing to have. And that's how you keep it interesting.
Got it. And how do you infuse creativity? What are your pursuits outside of chess that sort of bring creativity to your chess?
Well, I listen to music. I watch other sports. I like astronomy. So I have the subjects that I follow. I read, you know, anything that allows you to disconnect from the game. Watch things on Netflix, you know, whatever. You know, whatever. House of Cards was nice for a while.
it's a bit rough weather. And I want to go back to a personal memory of mine. I happened to catch one of your games with Magnus Carlsen in Chennai at one of the hotels here. And I remember that game vividly. I think it was one of the longest games that has been played, if I vaguely remember. And he was taking, he was walking around, but you had your concentration on the board and, you know, there were, I think, a couple of moves that probably went into maybe longish periods of time, 20 minutes or 30 minutes. I'm curious about what goes on, let's say for a minute, if you took the longest move that you've ever made or the longest time you've ever taken to make a move, is the bulk of time evaluating different possibilities or is it playing out scenarios and coming back? Just break that for us. How does the time get spent?
I think one of the longest things I've had is over an hour.
Wow.
In London once. And basically what had happened was that I had gotten into a bit of trouble. Then I realized I'm still very much in the game, but it's like it's full of minefields. I make a mistake here, I make a mistake there, it's over. And that particular think, you should normally not, you would not need an hour. When you're spending an hour, it means you're unable to think very clearly. So, first, let's describe what thinking clearly is. Thinking clearly is looking, saying, these are the four alternatives I have. Then you say, okay, A, this move. And then you follow A down to its logical conclusion. You see what you like. You come back. You do B. You come back. You do C. Then you do D. Then based on the information you have, you make your move. You pick your one and you make your move. And if I had done that, I wouldn't have needed 1 hour. But what happens is you go down A, then you come back, you go down B, you come back, and suddenly you think, wait, I missed something in A. And you go back down A and you come back. And so a lot of this work is wasted because you're going over stuff you're already gone, but you think you have found something new here and there. That is what happens more often because sometimes the brain needs to go down A, come back, and think about something else before, but in the background, it's somehow working there and it'll find something. Now, if we could think an hour on every move, it would be a different game. But sometimes these critical moments, you have to think like that. I think you can't try for perfection here. Like I said, the way your brain will present the answers is something you'll just have to getting used to. But you try to manage this as much as possible. Yeah, on the efficient days, you'll do a better job. And some days, you'll just go over a lot of material again and again. Ideally, the thinking is very clear and you see the essential and you reject everything else. But sometimes you get muddled.
Got it. There's so much gold in just this nugget that this could be a separate podcast conversation on its own. Who does not want to harness their mental faculties and bring that to bear in whatever they do? Of the various things I learned in this segment, here are a couple that stand out for me. First is the point Vishy makes about taking a break at move 40 and coming back with a fresh mind with a view of clearing up the baggage of the past. It's an interesting practice that reminds me of the book Triggers by the coach Marshall Goldsmith. The crux of the book is about the fact that we all have all kinds of triggers around us. And often the triggers lead to impulse behavior that often could be suboptimal. He really urges us to be mindful of the triggers that we experience or are likely to come across, and suggests a mechanism of taking a breather or injecting some mindfulness that enables us to respond to the trigger in a thoughtful and a nuanced way. We all are working often on some developmental themes. The key question often is, what are the triggers we need to watch out for, and how do we build the pause to break the pattern of impulse behavior? Second is the point about the power of the subconscious mind. Vishy talks about it in multiple contexts. He talks about the fact that when he was a child, he would often take a break from chess and study, but when he would come back to the board, it would appear clearer. He talks about that in the context of how he sleeps over a problem, or how when he's evaluating options A, B, C, and D, his brain often flip-flops between various option trees. I'm reminded of the work by Adam Grant in his book Originals, where he talks about marinating in a certain idea or a problem for a period of time. While there's something to be said about the downsides of being too slow, I think there's something equally significant to be said about the perils of being too hasty or fast. It's worth thinking about the sweet spot in terms of marinating in a problem long enough for us to harness the full potential of the conscious and the subconscious mind. Thank you for listening. For more, please visit playtopotential.com. If you want to listen offline, you can also find the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or one of the other podcast apps.